Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me, Teacher, a podcast for educators where we, teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today it is my pleasure to bring you Amy Fast. She is a high school assistant principal of McMinnville High School, and if you haven't heard about her on Twitter, you should, because she has great things to say about all things education, including how we should take care of our teachers. Hey guys, it is 2018. Happy New Year to everyone around the world. I hope you had a safe and exciting New Year's Eve. If you were like me and stayed in, I hope you enjoyed staying in. Not all of us like to go party all the time, so if you're like that, you're one of me. Although if you were partying, I used to be like you too. Anyway, back to the subject at hand. We have some changes coming to Teach Me Teacher this year. Changes for the better, hopefully. What we are going to be doing is every episode is now going to be, I'm still going to be giving you guys the same amount of content, probably a little bit more in terms of how much we are going to be talking about these episodes, because what I realize we're missing with the episodes is there's no reflection piece. There's no debrief. We're not talking enough about what we're saying. In other words, you guys are getting this content in these episodes, but sometimes I feel like there's not enough context for all the teachers. So if we're talking about ELA stuff, I feel like the science teachers and the math teachers don't know how to connect that to their own practices necessarily. Or if we're talking to administrators or principals, I feel like we don't always connect that to how teachers can use that, or how we can use that to empower our practices and everyday grind that is our job sometimes. So what I'm adding is a debrief section of the episodes where we can actually talk about how these episodes apply to us in our daily practices. And I can talk directly to you. I feel like we kind of have this sterile relationship right now. Unless you've liked our Facebook page or you follow me on Twitter, there's really no back and forth between us. There is just me doing these interviews and these discussions and these conversations, and you're listening. There is no us communicating to each other, and I really want 2018 to be the year where Teach Me Teacher becomes less of something you just tune into every 2 weeks and more of something that you're a part of. It's a part of your weekly schedule. We interact more and more because I want you guys to feel like this is your show. I want to do the things that you want to do, and to do that, we got to have open forum conversation, which means I need to talk to you directly a lot more. So just like I'm doing now, we're going to interact, we're going to talk, we're going to discuss. So by the end of my discussion with Amy Fast coming up, what you are going to be able to stick around for is we're going to do a small debrief next week at the beginning of the episode. That way we can lead into the second episode with Amy Fast, hitting the ground running, ready to dive into all the great stuff. But we have a great episode for you right now. We dive into so many things. Amy Fast is a brilliant human being, and I really enjoyed this interview. I hope you guys, once again, enjoy the new format. Let me know on iTunes, go to Facebook, tell me how you're enjoying these debriefs once we get them rolling and get everything figured out. But really, again, the goal is for us to communicate and to be open with each other and to have this an actual relationship rather than this sterile thing of you guys just consuming content. With that said, peace. Enjoy the conversation. I will see you next episode for our debrief. All righty, Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
You know what? You were one of the people who I've been looking at, and I'm like, I really want her on the podcast, just waiting for my in, waiting for the moment to pitch you somehow or somehow stumble, because cold emailing or cold tweeting is always kind of shady business sometimes. But every once in a while, something works itself out, and we get people like you on. So thank you for coming on.
I don't let you down.
Yeah, no, you're not going to let us down. You are, like, the other day I was sitting in my couch. You know how your phone, when someone gets a lot of retweets that you follow, it tells you that so-and-so retweeted so-and-so?
Right.
Yours pop up all the time because everyone in the educational field is constantly retweeting what you're saying. So you're going to be a rock star. But if anyone who doesn't know who you are, I'm going to go ahead and pitch it to you. What? Just explain us kind of what your role is right now, what you're doing, and what's happening in Amy's world.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a third-year high school assistant principal in, like you said, McMinnville, Oregon. Prior to being a high school administrator, I was a teacher for 10 years at both the fourth and fifth grade level. So I have quite a bit of elementary school experience and then actually an instructional coach at the elementary and mid-level. So I kind of have this unique perspective of K-12 in one district anyway. And I joke with the kids that are in my high school that I they aren't going to be able to get rid of me. I'll just follow them to college because a lot of them have known me since they were kindergartners and now they're seniors and they can't seem to shake me. So so that's my primary role as high school administrator. And I also am really interested in education policy. And so I've written a book on that, and that was the focus for my doctoral research. And in general, I just like engaging in conversations with people around the world about how we can improve education for our students.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is there are the world of Twitter is really great because there's so many educators who are outspoken, but it's not that popular in, like, when you just run into people on the street. Like when I'm in schools and just talking to people, like a lot of people aren't on Twitter and a lot of people aren't putting right. their information out there or putting their opinions out there about education. What made right. you decide to kind of jump to that side of it?
Well, I'm a pretty big nerd, so that's a little bit. And I really enjoy philosophizing and debating and talking with people too that will challenge my ideas or make me or push them further and make me think more deeply about them. But actually, I was not on Twitter until my publishing company said, well, you know, you need to, as part of my book contract, you need to get on social media and kind of advertise it. And I like we mentioned earlier before we started recording this, I struggle with self-promoting quite a bit. So I thought, well, okay, I'll do that, but I'm not gonna post about my book, but I will post about ideas that are in my book, and if those ideas have merit, then they'll take hold. And really, I care less about selling my book as I do about having these ideas take hold and really hopefully shape the landscape of education, because I believe that the people that I researched and the ideas that they had that ultimately are what created my book have such valid points that they could really do things for our students and in turn society that would be meaningful change.
Yeah. And you know, not to harp on this point, but that whole self-promotion thing, that piece that if you really want your ideas to be out there, you kind of have to be involved in either the conversation or be, you know, that self-promotion somehow, right? You're obviously not saying buy my Absolutely. Book, buy my book, but you're having to go out there and say certain things. Is it awkward, or was it awkward at first when you started spreading these ideas through social media, or did you
What's
come to it naturally?
There's like this underlying assumption that someone will care, and especially yeah. when you've got like two followers. Who am I talking to anyway? Even when I was writing my book, I assumed that maybe my mom would read it, and then that would be the extent to which people even paid attention. But if anything, it's really helpful for me to have kind of this living document of my own thoughts. It's like this virtual, really transparent journal of my professional like growth. And so what I find is that it really helps to more than anything ground me in my beliefs and remind me of what's important to me. And the constant writing on Twitter is as much for myself as anyone else, because I have to, especially now that I have students that follow me and staff that follow me on Twitter, and what I'm saying, I have to practice what I preach essentially. And so it's enough. It's as much for me to make sure that I'm grounding myself in my beliefs every week as it is for, you know, having a greater discussion about the ideas with people across the country and across the world.
I just released a podcast with Colby Sharp all about this subject of getting out there, sharing your work, sharing your ideas with colleagues and whatnot. And one of the things that we hit on, which is kind of what you put out there, is even if you know, you're not really talking to that many people. If you're just starting out or, you know, you literally have like 50 followers and none of them ever do anything to you. None of them talk or respond. Right. It's still you reflecting on your ideas, practices, beliefs, et cetera. Right.
Correct.
Yeah. And that's really valuable. We tell our teachers to do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Is, hey, you should, what happened in that lesson, right? Let's reflect on what's going on here. And we ask our students, hey, so let's reflect on what actually happened. And yet a lot of us, we don't actually step out and do that often. Do you think it's essential at this point?
I'll be really moved by something that happened in the school day. And it will make me reflect on my practice. And then even the task of having to put it into 280 characters and previously 140 really makes you have to drill down to like, what is the big takeaway from this experience? What is the most meaningful? How can I put this into the fewest amount of words that have the biggest amount of impact and can convey the meaning of what happened? And that task in itself is one that really promotes reflection, I think. And so it's been, I think Twitter has been more beneficial for me than it has for any of those with whom I've connected. And so I enjoy the practice of reflecting and constantly trying to put into words the feelings and thoughts that I'm having throughout the day.
You know, you're kind of a kindred spirit in a lot of ways when you're talking about how you love to debate and challenge people's points. And, you know, I used to use Facebook before I started Teach Me Teach or anything like that. I would literally, you know, I'm a big fan of just taking the side of something, even if I don't actually agree with it, and then arguing it just to see what counter arguments I can get. Yeah. And one of the things I started doing since Teach Me Teacher is more, you know, focusing obviously on the education side, because that's what I'm delving more and more deeper into my practice. But one thing I started doing is I've been writing what I call a memoir for educators, which is it's about my life growing up to where how teachers affected me positively and negatively, and then how that relates to me teaching now. And one thing I find myself doing is it's really challenging to like look at yourself in an honest light, both as a teacher and like as a person. Like it's therapeutic, but it's challenging.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
How much of your work, because you said like you get some, like inspired throughout the day and you want to say something, how much of, is all of your stuff like that? Or is a lot of it just in your head and you're pontificating with yourself and then you're like, oh, that's good. And you decide to put it out there.
Well, it's funny because I look back at things that I was passionate about when I was, you know, in my undergrad program and things that I am passionate about or was passionate about when I was teaching and things that I wrote my book on and things that really hit home now as an administrator. And I think there's definitely, if you look, like you said, with your memoir, if you look throughout a person's professional experiences or their life, these broad themes tend to emerge. And I've always been very interested in student voice. I've always been very reflective and philosophical about the purpose of education in general. So I am someone who's often deep in thought. But I would say that those thoughts tend to, stem from very, very common themes that have been prevalent throughout my career and throughout my life. And like you said, a lot of our own life experience likely shapes those themes that we're interested in general. So, I think that it's important for me to stay in schools because I would struggle to continually argue points that I find valid if I was no longer working with kids or with teachers. I think I'd find myself less credible because the research always has to be balanced with, now let's watch this play out in real time with real people.
Yeah. And oh my God. So that's literally what, like the germination of the Teach Me Teacher podcast was talking to real people in real schools, because I got really tired of going to all these seminars. And the first thing the person says is, well, I haven't been in a school in 20 years, but this is how I want to teach. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? I'm not going to listen to this.
Right.
You lose your validation. And if you do care about education, you have to find a way to somehow be in school. And you can be in schools in a lot of ways. You don't actually have to be an administrator or teacher. Exactly. But
you got to get in there, though.
Yeah. So let's go ahead. I want to segue into you know, you talked about how a lot of the things you say are from experience and whatnot. Now, what you've been doing recently, and one of the main reasons I wanted you on the podcast, is I've been really wanting to talk about this idea of, you know, we live in a world where educators feel beat down in a lot of ways. If you go anywhere in any safe social space where teachers can just talk to each other, it's not going to be long before you hear the negative stories or how like disenfranchised educators feel, either by their administrators, their politicians, by their school, you know, whoever. And you've been tweeting a lot about this over time, but I feel like recently you've been like on a roll talking about the well-being of teachers.
Or on a rant, maybe.
Yeah, and I want to know, like, what are you seeing that brought this up? And when we're talking about the well-being of teachers, what are you actually talking about?
Right. So, you know, simply speaking, I guess I mean I want teachers to be happy and healthy and fulfilled in their work. And I struggle because I think a lot of people who say that say it because it's a means to an end. And even in my tweet that I think you're referring to, or one of my tweets, I wrote that, you know, if we have happy, healthy, and fulfilled teachers, essentially that's ultimately what's going to be best for our students. But even before that, even before thinking about our students, even though our students are the primary goal of education, like, we should care about our teachers just because they're humans under our care, and that matters. And we want those under our care to thrive as well. And so I guess, simply speaking, I don't want them to be miserable when they come to work. I want them to be inspired and excited about what they're doing, because that will be great for kids, but also because I care about them, and we all should care about them.
What do you see in schools or in education in general that leads to us not taking care of teachers? Like, where does that line like get lost at?
Yeah, and I think the obviously teachers have a lot to do, and the task that they're asked to do is huge, and they have little time and little resources and aren't paid enough. But all that aside, even though those are huge deals, all that aside, I think the biggest burden to teachers, what makes them the most disenfranchised, is that there's this lack of this noble purpose for our work, and this lack of this common mission that teachers, parents, students, administrators can like get behind together, arm in arm, and get excited about. I think it's less about the load and more about what we're asking them to carry. I mean, so of course, anyone tasked with growing humans is going to have hard work ahead of them. Like, that's not, I'm never going to be able to, as an administrator, make that easy work or make that less work. But I feel like I can make it more meaningful, and I can make it more inspiring, and I can make it more fulfilling, so it doesn't feel quite as dehumanizing or disenfranchising or demoralizing for teachers. And I think going back to some of the research that inspired my book and that I always quote is, I think Daniel Pink, when he talks about people needing to feel autonomous in their work and feel like they can be masters over their craft and feeling like that there's a noble purpose behind it. When they have those wheel drivers in everything they do, they tend to be, the work doesn't feel like work anymore. And I think that's really what I'm referring to when I'm talking about teacher well-being, is not that I can always take everything off their plates, but that I can help to make the work meaningful and fulfilling.
Did your perspective change at all when you went from teacher to administrator?
Perspective on what?
Like on how, like, because this is how I imagine it. I imagine there are, you know, as a teacher, we sit there and we get, a lot of the times we get initiatives that come down or things get sent to us like, hey, get this done. And a lot of it has to do with not like actually teaching, right?
Right.
And from my perspective, it's like, why won't you just let me teach? Why are you constantly stepping in the way of letting me do what I want to do? I get, we have to do other things and whatnot. I understand that, but sometimes it's like, oh my God, just let me teach, right? And a lot of teachers feel like that. But when I imagine once I make that jump to administration, or once people make that jump, you realize that it's not as easy as it might seem to not put so much on teachers' plates. Is that the case? Or
I mean, in some ways my convictions have only gotten stronger, and but I guess you'd have to ask my teachers if I seem to have changed. You know, because like I said, I've worked in the same district, and granted I didn't work with the teachers at our high school as a coworker. But I want to say that I expected when I went into administration that I would be like, oh man, I just didn't get it. Like, this is what it's really about. And I was oversimplifying things, and I understand now why it has to be this complicated, and all these various initiatives need to take hold. And in reality, I think I'm more passionate about the real work that needs to be done and removing barriers so that teachers can do that work. And my job isn't to unroll initiatives and hand them out to teachers so that they can carry them out, but it's to surface student and teacher voice so that I can really figure out what needs to be done and then give them the reins so that they can do that work. So I'm fortunate to work on an administrative team where we really believe in kind of teacher-powered schools and grassroots efforts to make change. I think the hard part as an administrator is you're faced with the reality of the constraint. So if a teacher says to me, you know, class size is too high, I'm like, yeah, you're right. I absolutely agree. And I don't know what to do about it. You know, I've yet to find a way to think outside the box enough with the master schedule to change that with the funding that we have. So I think those are the issues are less about that I have different perspective now that I'm an administrator. It's more that the constraints are very real, and I feel frustrated with myself that I can't think outside the box enough to remove those constraints that are bigger than, you know, our school or bigger than our district that are, like you said, there's things happening at the federal level, the legislative level, that are also demoralizing for the whole field of education. Administrators feel that same frustration.
And you brought up a really good point, which is there's a lot of restrictions on education that a lot of people don't know about. I didn't know about a lot of the funding issues that happen, really. I mean, I knew about them, but I didn't really know about them until I started my master's program and really started being forced to dive into these things. Right. And it's flabbergasting, some of the stuff that goes down and the restrictions that public schools have to work under. What, from your perspective in where you're at your school, what are some of the biggest restrictions that go on that actually prevent you guys from not necessarily doing what you want to do, but that cause you to really have to get creative with how you do things?
Well, I mean, I tend to be a really big picture person, so this may not answer your question totally, but I think, and I'll speak from not just my school, but what I think is a huge restriction at the national level is what our end goal is, what our focus is. So we have this pretty narrow end goal, which is we consider ourselves to be successful if we have good scores on our standardized assessments. And I don't think that that is a bad thing. I think that in some cases we have better assessments than we've had in a long time, but it certainly should be a part of this multiple measures on how our students are doing. And so when we have this super narrow focus that says, well, if your kids are doing great in math and reading, then you have a successful school that is going to create these successful citizens of your communities later on, then all the initiatives and all the money and all the work that's done is to improve those scores. And the reality is that those scores aren't correlated to how successful a student is going to be when they leave us. And so that's another thing that you probably see a lot on my Twitter feed is the measures that we have in schools versus the measures that are actually correlated to someone who's successful in their career and in life after high school. And my big frustration is that when those measures don't line up, then we're putting our eggs in the wrong basket, essentially, with the work that we're doing. And I think ultimately that's what's so frustrating and demoralizing to teachers is we say, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this, because this is going to bring up our scores. And they're saying, okay, I believe that those are things that we need to work on in schools, but also, you know, our kids need to be coming to school in the first place. There's that. That's a big constraint. And how do we get our kids to want to come to school? We need to make school engaging and exciting. And how do we do that? Well, that's a much different conversation than just how do we improve scores, because we can improve scores by doing things that don't improve the humans in the building. And so I think the lack of complexity is that we that we pay attention to is actually like a huge constraint. And teachers, because they're doing the day-to-day work, really understand that complexity of what it takes to help a kid grow exponentially in a year's time. And I think that we need to listen to our teachers to really validate what their ideas and how to honor that complexity and how to move students forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like there is a cry for a little bit of nuance in this situation.
Absolutely.
Because we, you know, and you're perfectly correct when you say that it takes so much. Yeah, I mean, we could measure a school's success on scores, but, you know, I'll use my school as an example. We had terrible culture. A lot of our kids were getting into fights. There were all kinds of things going on for a while. And then slowly we worked to rebuild the culture piece, the respect factor for educators and students and administrators. And, you know, piece by piece, we created this school that was a lot more team-based. It was a lot more friendly to everyone involved. Everyone felt better. We actually felt more like a team rather than teachers quitting every other month. Right. And, but you know, those don't show up on our scores because we generally have, you know, our middle school is generally the lowest scoring middle school in the entire district. Right. And you even see it when they show the graphs at a convocation is what they call it when we all at the beginning of the year where they show everybody, you know, they chart them all. And then our school is literally all the way at the bottom. And when you look at that, it's like, oh, this school is failing. Right. But right. The massive gains that we've made on the other end
those will pay off. I mean, we recently had Betsy DeVos actually came to our school because she was looking at schools in the nation that are outliers in terms of their performance compared to their demographics that normally correlate to low success. So when you take schools like ours in the state of Oregon and compare them, we're kind of off the charts in terms of our students' growth in their tested subjects. And so when she came and held these like student and teacher focus groups, basically to find out what we were doing differently. And none of what was talked about was, you know, math and reading and writing in terms of what we're doing differently. But what we were talking about is, you know, our career pathways and our opportunities for students to get excited about learning and passionate, and the opportunities that we have for teachers to, you know, innovate and get creative and be excited about what they do. And so even though it doesn't seem like it's a direct correlation between the work that we're doing and the scores that we're getting, it totally is correlated. The culture that you speak of and the things that we do to get kids excited about learning that aren't the drill and kill practices that some places use for tests, really, they actually end up paying off on those tests in the end.
Well, I have to ask, what was Betsy's reaction to you guys when she was there?
Oh, she didn't talk a lot. It was definitely a visit that was choreographed to be more about listening to our students than it was about an open dialogue back and forth. But she was excited enough about what our students and staff had to say that she actually invited our admin team to DC to be part of a think tank, which we didn't actually end up being able to do because we all came down with the flu. But, I think that she got excited about how excited our students were, and our students we have 100% free and reduced lunch at our school. And a lot of our students come from poverty, many of whom come from extreme poverty. You know, and they're talking about the extent to which their teachers care about them and that they feel like they can trust in their teachers and essentially that they feel like they're being raised by their teachers, some of them, and that also students speaking to the opportunities to explore their passions. And I think that's that the hearing from students who are proud of their school and proud of the work that they do in their school is, I think, the compelling research we can gather on what works in education.
You know, what's funny is you can look at that little story you just told and go, man, they have really great teachers there. But on the subject of this episode, we can flip that around and say, man, they have teachers that are being taken care of there.
Right. But it's funny because I will have teachers that will probably razz me for even doing this podcast because of how badly I take care of myself. I get told all the time by teachers, go home, go see your kids, go to sleep. So I need to do a little better job taking care of myself. And I also have had teachers that say, you know, when we get all this national recognition, they're like, well, this is why I'm so exhausted, because we're doing really great work and it's really hard and I'm so tired. And so, you know, I still don't think that our teachers are taken care of enough. And I don't know that I don't have the answers. Our team doesn't have the answers or the tools to take care of them the way they deserve to be taken care of. But I want to say that they know that we care about them and know how much we value them. And I actually had, I had one of my classified staff members who I'm working with this year, and she's this like genius and this total innovator, and has had these ideas for how to promote equity of opportunity in terms of students' knowledge about options after high school. And I've just kind of encouraged her to run with these ideas, which in turn have created a ton of work for her because her ideas are big and they're profound, and yet it takes a lot to pull them off. And she said to me, you know, Amy, I've never worked harder in my life than I'm working this year, and I've never been more passionate about my job and excited about the work that I'm doing. And so to me, I think it speaks to this idea of teacher well-being. And no matter how much it's true that teachers' workloads are out of control, the same is also true that, you know, it's the kind of work that really ultimately matters, and that will either make or break a teacher's passion and help them to feel fulfilled and inspired by their work. And if she can say, I've never worked harder and I'm exhausted, and yet I'm so excited and love coming to work every day and really believe in this work, I think that's still well-being, and that's a better kind of teacher well-being than if she'd been asked to just jump through hoops and the work was minimal. That would probably feel more draining than doing meaningful work that is, you know, that's big work at the same time.
Guys, that was the end of episode 1 with Amy Fast. Stick around for episode 2, where we continue our discussion, continue talking about taking care of teachers, anticipating the well-being of our educators, and making sure that we serve everyone and help each other to become better educators the best we can. We're going to do a brief reflection at the beginning and end of next episode, so make sure you stick around. Remember to go to Facebook, hit our like page, that way you can stay involved. Go follow us on Twitter. Make sure to go to iTunes, hit that subscribe button, leave a review if you are digging all the new episodes. Make sure to tweet at Amy Fast, tell her how much you are enjoying this episode. In the meantime, I'm going to let this beat fade out because I just love it so much. See you next week.